Welcome to the CIM Marketing Podcast. The contents and views expressed by individuals in the CIM Marketing Podcast are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of the companies they work for. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the CIM Marketing Podcast. And, you know, just a few days ago, we had Earth Day and Earth Week, many activities around the world in industry and business to try and bring ourselves closer to this golden goal, which is net zero. And to discuss how our industry, or specifically the advertising industry, can get closer to net zero and may soon achieve it, we've got a very special guest with us today in the shape of Mr. Matt Bourne. Matt is comms director of the Advertising Association and Ad Net Zero. He's a pioneer of the climate action work stream, and very much hot off the press is his new book, Sustainable Advertising, of which he is co-author. So I can't think of anyone better to tell us how and when the advertising industry gets towards net zero. Matt, how are you today, sir?
Very well, Ben. Thanks a lot for inviting me along to speak with you today. Really looking forward to it.
It's great to have you on the show. And I think it's probably fair to say you may disagree that the advertising industry has not always been seen as a sort of spearhead of environmental progress, getting the consumer to buy as much as possible, as frequently as possible, perhaps some might say, is counter to the goals.
Yeah, that's all very fair. And I wouldn't necessarily describe, you know, the advertising industry as the spearhead at the moment either, in terms of, you know, the transition and the work that needs to be done. As I joined the Advertising Association about 5.5-6 years ago now, what I could see when I look at the reputation of advertising was something coming down the tracks called climate change, yeah, where if we're on the wrong side of history, the advertising industry is going to carry the responsibility for many, many problems that are going to be created by, you know, the realities of climate change. But on the flip side of it, so as a comms director, I was like, I described it as tobacco times 100 in terms of the reputational threat to our industry. But there is a flip side to that, which is it doesn't have to be a reputational threat. It can be a massive opportunity to demonstrate what responsible advertising and indeed responsible marketing looks like in a time of climate change. And that is all about essentially understanding the role of shifting our economy from one that's carbon-based and consumption-heavy to one that is a sustainable economy and one that produces more value from less stuff. Advertising and marketing has got a critical role to play in that, and a really exciting role, you know, a really inspirational role to play in that.
There's a theory at the core of all of this stuff, which speaks to what you've just been saying, which is that actually, as humans, we buy services. We don't buy products necessarily. We buy jobs to be done. And in order to make the shift from people having stuff and buying lots of things that do these jobs to be done to buying the completion of the task is part of the way of advertising. And, you know, what I mean by this is, nobody grows up having an ambition to have a washing machine, for example. What they do have a need for is clean laundry. And if we can change the shift in the mentality about amassing stuff through the way we advertise our services, that's presumably a long way towards the goal of what we're trying to do, which is try and enhance the consumer experience while reducing consumer consumption.
It's exactly that, Ben. And, you know, what the exciting thing is, the entrepreneurial business opportunities right across our economy to sort of change that and shift that. So, you know, I'll give you another example, which I sort of find personally relevant. As I grew up and as I had my own place and married and had a family, one of the things that is expected of me is DIY, collecting, yeah, DIY tools which sit in a a shed at the bottom of my garden, and I use once or twice a year. And I live on a road where there are probably, you know, 80 houses, and there are probably 80 drills sitting in sheds at the bottom of every garden. And I'd far rather spend my money not on a drill, but on someone helping me put the shelf up straight. So the business models behind a lot of things that we've become used to, I think, can be challenged and changed. Advertising at its best promotes competition and innovation, and it supports jobs and livelihoods.
Yeah.
So the business models that need to come through need to support jobs and livelihoods. They need to improve people's quality of life. You know, they need to be aspirational. But I think that the mantra of kind of how do I create value out of less stuff? And how do I move to this kind of more circular sense of economy, I think, you know, is so critical. This is the brief. This is the brief for our industry for this decade and probably for the next 15 to 20 years.
Well, on the tools point, you've got a kindred spirit here. You didn't know because we've only just met, but I'm the same. I collect, I'm not going to name the brands, but a number of brands of tools. And I've got, like you, a shed full of tools, and probably my neighbors have got similar amounts there. And like you, I often could do with a third pair of hands beyond my son to hold up a shelf or help me with a task that requires more than one individual doing it, and be better to spend my money on that. But if you're a tool manufacturer, going back to source, how do you make money out of a business that is essentially loaning tools rather than selling them? That requires such a fundamental shift in the way that the consumer model is designed that it poses a big challenge, not just for advertisers, for salespeople as well, doesn't it?
Oh, huge. And I'm not underestimating that challenge, but I think that though that sort of challenge to lots and lots of business models, you know, is reality in terms of how we're going to shift our economy. You know, because those tools are still going to be needed, maybe not in quite the same volume if you take on the, you know, the idea of borrowing things or hiring things, renting things, and transferring the money that you spend to a service, you know, in support of them. I mean, fashion's a really, you know, good example. You know, the kind of, you know, renting that fantastic outfit that you need for that special occasion rather than owning it and then it sitting in a wardrobe for many years.
That model's taken off, hasn't it? It's starting to take off. Yeah,
totally.
Because the consumer's realizing that she can get a better quality of outfit for, as you say, what the one or two or three times a year that she goes to a particular event, rather than having something that's not as good, as you say, gathering dust.
Yeah, totally. And so the job for advertising is to, you know, ultimately make those sort of lifestyle decisions aspirational and normal, natural. You know, things that we all look to do, and in support of, you know, and recognizing that if business models are changing, that does put pressure on how you transition. So how do you do that? I'd love to be in a situation where every marketer and every partner of a marketer in every advertising business or sales team, media owner, we're all saying, okay, so I'm looking at your product portfolio. What I'd like to understand is your product portfolio based on which is the most unsustainable product and which is the most sustainable. Can we analyze it in that way? My job with you is to grow market share against your competitors of the most sustainable product. And how do I get as much of my marketing and advertising spend allocated in support of that as fast as I can? Because it's all a competition and a race to become the most sustainable player in each part of the economy. I'm convinced, for all the work that we did writing the book and interviewing people, that for many different reasons, whether it's personal experience of climate change, which is going to really affect people, whether it's regulatory issues, whether it's private equity investment and financial kind of pressures, whether it's employees and talent simply not wanting to work for your business if you're not sustainable, all of these pressures are colliding to make really the focus, how do I be the most successful when it comes to a brilliant sustainable product or service that I'm offering versus my competitive set?
Yeah, it's interesting. And that's the business to business piece, making that outreach to the manufacturers and talking about, you know, how do we focus spend? How do we concentrate our firepower on the most sustainable lines that you've got and push those forward so you can become the greenest in your sector, which pays off in a whole bunch of other ways other than just the environment, as you say, better access to labour, great PR and so on and so forth, as well as having the best environmental credentials. When you're making the case to consumers, when you're doing the B2C bit, because you are having to affect a change in the consumer mindset in some areas or in many areas, what are the key techniques you do to say, well, hang on a second, you don't need that to buy that drill. You don't need to buy that dress. You can hire that dress. You can hire that drill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The techniques you use through advertising to change that mindset, you know, to break the mold, if you like, in the consumer's brain.
So it was really interesting because I had the, you know, the luxury in a way of interviewing, you know, behavior science experts for the book and really studying that. So I spoke with, for example, the behavior insights team, you know, which was spun out of the UK government, the Nudge Department. I spoke with experts from NYU Stern, spoke with kind of, you know, specialist agencies and so on. So the basics of behavior change, you know, the EAST framework, which is make it easy, make it accessible, make it social, i.e., you know, it's normal, and make it timely, are, you know, true of all behavior change campaigns. But the interesting thing about the sustainable behavior change piece is we ask the question, Why has 30 years of climate change advertising failed when it comes to the mass market? And when you look at behavior change, positive framing is fundamental. And when you look at climate change advertising, it's succeeded to a certain extent, which is it's raised the issue. But a lot of it, when you see it, is negative. And yes. Scary and frightening. And the impact of that is, you know, ostrich effect. I put my head in the sand. I don't know what to do about it. I'm a bit too scared to do anything about it. And so as we dug into the research, we uncovered really interesting stuff by, for example, there's an agency called Media Bounty, which has done a piece of research called The Persuadables. And what they've done is they've said, OK, we're looking at the UK population. There's a hardcore that basically will do anything and everything when it comes to their lifestyle decisions, product services, choices in positive climate action. Okay. Equally, there's a hardcore that reject it.
Yeah.
And then there is a mass middle who are, yeah, I'd like to do something about it. I don't quite know what, and I don't quite know how. And I've got an awfully busy life and I've only, you know, I've got this much money and so on and so forth. So for that audience, positive framing is really key. And the benefits of the sustainable behavior change don't need to scream, oh, it's better for the planet. A yeah. lot of the positive framing can just be, you know, as advertising has always been, which is about, you know, this will make you a bit healthier or this will make your life a bit better, this might be better for the kids or fun to do with the kids, this is a different way of doing things that's exciting with your friends. This is a really interesting sort of thing, as we're saying we want all ads to be in service of a sustainable economy. It's completely wrong to think that what we're saying is we want every single ad to say this is sustainable.
Yeah,
because it won't need to.
There are many, many other benefits that you can promote instead in pursuit of a sustainability aim.
Exactly.
Your message doesn't have to be sustainability. We go back to our two earlier examples. Through some sort of communal tool hire scheme, presumably the advantage of the consumer there is that they get access to better quality tools because the manufacturer wants to is using the best quality tools that don't break down and that can tolerate lots more uses than a standard household device. With the fashion renting services, the obvious non-sustainable advantage is that the customer looks better at the black tie ball because he or she gets access to top quality clothes that they would otherwise normally be able to afford.
Yeah. So, if I if if I give you an example, I had a great conversation with one of the team at for the sales house at ITV, biggest, you know, commercial media broadcaster in the UK. And they were saying, you know, we've got a brief to promote these new chips that are coming through. And the ad creative is connecting the chips to better soil, so it's more sustainable. And they were saying the ITV audience, mum, dad, they really don't care about that. What they care about when it comes to chips is, are they going to be really nice crispy chips, 15 to 16 minutes in the oven, easy to cook, that the kids are going to love?
Yeah.
He said the audience won't care. However, the sales team might care, because ITV is under scrutiny from its private equity, you know, shareholders. How much of its revenue is in support of a sustainable future?
Yeah.
And if what they're showing is that through market share, they're promoting a more sustainable type of chips versus another competitor and helping build that, that's actually a really strong incentivizing, you know, commercial background. This is why everything for me loops back to, what do you know about the products and services you're promoting, and how are you stealing market share against unsustainable versions as an alternative, and how quickly are you doing that? Because if you show you're successfully doing that, that's the win. When it comes to the punter buying those chips, just make a great ad that sells them those chips.
Looking for more ways to learn and upskill? CIM members can register now for our upcoming member-exclusive webinars. More details available at cim.co.uk/content.
The chips are a great example too. The key benefits for those are dissimilar. The benefit to the mum and dad is, as you say, they taste good, they're great, they're easy to cook. The benefit to ITV is, well, ITV doesn't probably have much of a preference over one brand of chips than the other, except when it comes to bottom line reporting. They've got to report back to their shareholders what they're doing to meet these targets on sustainability and get them closer to a net zero goal. So be creative and tailor your marketing, your advertising to who you're talking to. It's an old lesson, isn't it? But when you're coming to sustainability, what you seem to be saying is that lesson hasn't been adhered to. In the past, if we're trying to promote sustainability, we're always using the sustainability factor as the main advertising line. And you're saying, in a lot of cases, that's a mistake.
Yeah, we've reached a point where I think it's been right to do that. But, you know, it's been what I would describe as niche, and what, you know, some of the big consultancies like Kantar describe as almost kind of like a luxury, you know, a green tax on products. And what we're saying is that the world desperately needs the mass market to shift to green, right? And the mass market won't pay a luxury tax on green products. You know, the reality is, whatever they say they want to do, when it comes to buying a product, they buy on price and they buy on accessibility. So we've got to get the most sustainable product in front of them, or sustainable alternative, sustainable service in front of them at the best price. And that's the big challenge as this, you know, is fast tracked to become mass market mainstream around the world.
How can advertising get there, though? Help us get there in terms of the price point and accessibility. I mean, it's one thing to be able to market the benefits that appeal to the right constituency, but there's another thing to help engender a situation where we are getting sustainable products to be able to compete on price and accessibility and utility, if you like, with less sustainable products.
Yes, so there's a brilliant initiative called Change the Brief, which is run by the Purpose Disruptors team. Within the sort of UK ad industry, and a number of brands have been, you know, signing up to that, which is about challenging this kind of notion of what you're promoting at the moment and what you should be promoting in terms of that kind of more sustainable alternative. So I think it starts there. It starts with the brief and the consciousness of what are we promoting and how sustainable is it? So one of the big conversations at the moment is how you connect up the marketing department and its, you know, its supply chain through advertising with the sustainability department. And I think one of the most important things we've got to do is to change the way we evaluate the success of our work. So the current way of evaluating the success of marketing will be around, you know, share of voice, sales, you know, competitive kind of growth, that, you know, in new kind of markets that you're entering, all of those kind of things. But I'd like to see sustainability metrics alongside those as well. So reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, water saving, landfill reduction. If you couple the two, so I can see, okay, through this, what I've managed to achieve, a successful campaign has been commercial because it's sold this amount of products. It's replaced this type of product with this one, which is a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, or it's pushed people away from this type of single-use product into this type of reuse product. So the benefits are this. That for me is the motivating thing that I actually think many people in marketing and advertising are crying out for, because it solves the conundrum of, is advertising, you know, and marketing essentially causing climate change, or is it doing everything in its power to tackle climate change?
Presumably the answer is both simultaneously, depending on how it approaches it. You know, marketing and advertising can cause climate change, but it can also be the solution to climate change by changing consumer behaviour.
It's exactly that. And that's why, you know, for me, you know, loop back to a conversation at the very start about the reputation of the ad industry and the reputation of marketers. Are you going to be on the right side of history or the wrong side of history? I want us to be on the right side of history. I want this industry to be one that people who are incredibly talented from a creative, strategic, technical point of view want to come and work in.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are great examples, aren't there, out there of exemplars, if you like, for others to follow that have worked extremely well. I mean, of all the stuff you've done, looked at in your book and in your daily work, can you name some of the best examples you've seen sustainable marketing in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the interesting thing was, so I run one of the AdNet Zero working groups. So AdNet Zero is the climate action initiative. And I run the Action 5, which is about promoting sustainable products and services and behavior change. And about 3 years ago, when we sort of started that group, I was a little frustrated that I didn't have the examples. I didn't have the examples, didn't have the case studies. And I'm like, you know, I can't talk to government, is my main role, about the positive impact of the ad industry if I don't have case studies of where we're doing it. And the editor of Campaign magazine was in the working group, and he said, well, the way we, over the years, the way we generate case studies is through awards. Yep. So we set up the Campaign at AdNet Zero Awards, which are now in their third year. We're just about to launch this year's awards. And so the work that's coming through, I would say to anybody listening, if they want to sort of see the very best examples, look at this free download, books of the winners. So the Grand Prix last year was the UK one was won by ITV. With ITV's eBay Love Island partnership, you know, where what you have is evidence of, you know, again, a big commercial broadcaster was promoting fast fashion on a mass popular culture initiative, shifted to, in a partnership with eBay, to essentially turn secondhand clothing into aspirational pre-loved clothing, and by doing so impacting and changing millions of people's behavior when it comes to, you know, that kind of capsule kind of wardrobe mentality.
It's an extraordinary case to do that, isn't it? I know a little bit about it. They were beforehand linked to a major fashion retailer.
Exactly.
And they since went and linked with eBay, and all of the clothing, correct me if I'm wrong, that is now worn on the show is previously worn secondhand.
That's that model, which is, you know, it's and not a mention of climate change, by the way. If you watch it, it's just about, you know, aspirational kind of clothes wearing and looking good and feeling good, all the things that, you know, that kind of audience are kind of interested in. And then we have an example that the International Grand Prix winner was for a supermarket in South America, Macro, where they developed a sticker, where the sticker on fruit and veg that essentially shows the range of color that banana or whatever it might be goes through while you can still eat it.
Ah.
and had various different recipe ideas, because what they wanted to do was stop people throwing food away before it could still be eaten. Yep. And the sticker is an absolutely brilliant, and we're talking about this ease, accessibility, timely. But it's at the point I look at it and I think, oh, that's gone off. Oh, no, it hasn't, because I can use it for this. Yep. Brilliant. Right, it's absolutely brilliant.
It's a genius simple solution, isn't it? You know, the black banana, make some banana bread from it. If it's green, you can probably leave it for a few days, but you can still eat it if you want to. And, you know, we've become so inured to having perfect looking fruit and veg in the shops that people wrongly think that if it's the wrong colour, it needs to be chipped out. But that's not the case. And that is a genius solution.
Yeah.
That allows people to see it instantly without any effort.
But we see those examples, you know, right across. So in the book, we interviewed the team at NatWest. So look at what's the role of financial services. They split it into three things. You know, they're working on their kind of the big bank investment, you know, sort of moving away from fossil investment, that kind of thing, which has been a big pressured area for a number of years. But then they look at their business customers and their retail customers, right? So the business customers, what they're doing is they're incentivizing SMEs across the UK to move to EV fleets and providing loans to sort of facilitate businesses, small businesses to get to net zero, and providing them with support to do that. And then for the individual customer, there's all sorts of kind of behavior nudges that they can do with spend. They've developed an app which allows you to track your carbon footprint against the purchasing decisions that you're making. So that's a great example of a big household brand that has assessed its role and said, this is how we affect positive change. Now, for some people listening, they might say, but it's still not enough. You know, they haven't divested yet completely from fossil. You know, they're working through that. They're pushing to do that by 2030. But I think that, you know, we're in a world where you've got a lot of voices, and there is a protest voice, rightly, which is consistently demanding for ever more, because we can't move quickly enough on this. The realities of climate change are hitting us now. This industry needs to move fast. And the book really talks about the kind of consciousness of everything we do and promote, and the way we make the work and the way we distribute the work has to be sustainable.
Yeah.
Has to be.
It's interesting that you said earlier, you sort of parsed your targets into three groups. My words, not yours, but the true believers, if you like, the people who will go out of their way to buy sustainable products, greener products, even if, you know, they're less convenient or more expensive. And then on the other side of the scale, the rejecters, if you like, the people who have no interest and actually perhaps sometimes avoid sustainable products, perhaps believing them to be more expensive or less effective. And then the persuadables in the middle. I mean, it sounds to me, with the sort of ideas that you're coming up with, we've got a good chance of an industry of really getting into those persuadables and turning, with the right advertising, the right marketing, turning their heads towards sustainable products and showing how those products can benefit them in many ways, not just sustainable ways. But in order to get to a net zero situation, at some stage, we're going to have to crack the rejectors. I mean, the people who really are not interested at all in this stuff. And I suppose my final challenge to you is, how does marketing and advertising go about, you know, changing the mindsets of those people? Because that is not a small group, by the way. You know, we may think it's a small group, but it's probably 20 or 25% of the population fall into that category of the sort of hardcore rejectors, and they're going to have to be persuaded at some point.
They are. And my concern, I'm going to take a step back from it being a responsibility of just advertising and marketing. My concern is the politicization of the issue of climate change and the polemic around that we see. We've seen a little bit of it in the UK, we see a lot of it in the US market. So I think brands need to be aware of the polemic and be careful of that they're not feeding that polemic further. The idea of being green is being woke is kind of, an area that I think we need to be very conscious of. But the flip of it would be, even for the rejectors, I would just say that what we've got to do is normalize what a sustainable world looks like.
Yeah.
You know, and so one of the things that we're working on now, actually through the AdNet Zero sort of piece, is more about the types of behaviors and types of choices that should just be ubiquitous, that could be part of the storytelling in your marketing campaign. I'll give you an example. You know, I'm marketing a pair of trainers, and I'm confident that that pair of trainers is a, you know, a sustainable kind of product, you know, replacing a more, you know, a less sustainable one. But in the storytelling of that trainers, one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that they hop on a piece of transport decision that's EV based. They're absolutely not getting in a petrol vehicle, because yep. I'm normalizing the sense of EV. I'm going to struggle if I'm putting them on a plane at the moment, but I might put them on a train.
Yeah.
I might put them on an EV scooter. I might, you know, I might actually just, you know, how do I normalize the transport decision, the travel decision? And that's just one example of a series of behaviors that I think we need to see through all of marketing and advertising over these, I'm talking this decade, to normalize that.
Normalize it, make sure that the context makes sense, that everything yeah. we're doing around the product is talking to this sustainable goal. Because that's totally. An easy pitfall, isn't it? That you
yeah.
you produce something sustainable, and then the accoutrements around it don't fit in with that vision.
The parallel I would draw is that, you know, we look at ads now and look at gender representation in ads, you know, from a decade ago, 20, 30, 40 years ago, and you jaw drops when you look at the sort of the difference in terms of what proper gender representation looks like, as one example of D&I. And I think marketers generally are very good on, you know, presenting a diverse, inclusive UK
yep.
to their audience. I'm not sure yet that we know what a sustainable UK looks like in the same way, but I think the marketers could do it, which is presenting a sustainable UK represented in these ways of normalizing these behaviors. And I think that broadly that is the brief beyond the products and services that we need to be selling and pushing to support green jobs.
Now, you're optimistic. Has the industry got the message?
I think the industry is getting the message. I think I'd love to see more breaking down to the silos where it's one person's responsibility around sustainability to it becoming every marketer, you know, is part of the day job. We write a manifesto in the book, and we say that, you know, essentially a practitioner in a sustainable advertising industry will be climate science literate. Yeah. Everyone. They'll understand it, because, you know, that's what, you know, everyone has a role.
And it becomes part of the portfolio of skills that all marketers and advertisers need.
Totally. This is why I think the next generation coming through, you won't necessarily have sustainability specialists. I think you'll have people that have an all-rounded understanding of what is and isn't sustainable, and, you know, and then skills to promote that through great advertising and marketing or whatever it might be.
So be as good at portraying sustainability as normal as we are at portraying diversity as normal is a great message to end on. Matt Bourne, that has been fascinating. Thank you for joining us on the show today. Will you come back at some point and let us know how progress is going?
Love to. I'm hopeful we'll get an opportunity to write a sequel to this book. Give us a couple of years, and I'm hopeful that we'll see lots more exciting, emerging sort of business models and campaigns that are supporting it that do, you know, deliver on this, because I think it's possible.
There's some clever ideas out there that are very workable, and some great exemplars for the industry to follow. And it's been a real insight today listening to you. Thanks very much indeed. And we'll see you on the show again soon, maybe less than 2 years, but sometime soon anyway.
Excellent. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the CRM Marketing Podcast on your platform of choice. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. We'd love to hear your feedback. CRM Marketing Podcast.